Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. I'm your host, Phil Holdsworth of Aurum Golf, and my guest today is Claire Downham. Hello, Claire.
Hello, Phil. How lovely to be here.
Well, thank you very much for coming and giving your time. I really appreciate this. Claire, you're known as the Queen of Calm, and I think that is a fantastic title, but tell us about it. Where did it come from? What was your journey to this point?
Well, really, Phil, from the absolute opposite of being the Queen of Calm. That was the start, really, of my journey to becoming the Queen of Calm, started from being in a place of extreme stress, really. So I was a primary school head teacher when I burnt out in 2015. And at that point, I think if you'd have said to me the day before, Claire, you seemed a bit stressed, I would have been quite indignant about that and quite upset. I'd have been very much, how very dare you say that I'm stressed? There's nothing wrong with me. I'm absolutely fine. I had literally no awareness of how stressed I was. I was absolutely physically and emotionally exhausted. I wasn't sleeping. I was catching every bug going. And I had multiple other symptoms of stress that I now know were stress related, but back then I absolutely didn't. And that led to me not working for a year. So I walked into work one day, I walked out, utterly burnt out, and I never actually went back to my job again. I had a year off sick, and during that year went through quite an up and down cycle of trying to get well, feeling like I was better, and then crashing back down again. It was a really difficult year, not least of all, not really helped by the fact that the NHS had said I had depression, and I didn't have depression. I had adrenal burnout, which is not the same thing. After that year, I was left with no choice really but to resign. So I resigned on the 1st of April, 2016. Quite an April Fool that was. Bang goes my 20-year career in education. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't really have a clue. And then quite bizarrely, I received an email about learning about hypnotherapy, about training to be a hypnotherapist. And I decided to go along to the course, not really because I thought I was going to start a business, but just because I'd always been interested in self-development and things like that. I'd always been interested in hypnotherapy and complementary therapies. And I thought, you know what, this would be something interesting. And it was only really towards the end of the course that I realized that I was going to be starting a business. So I call that my first accidental business. I'm not a hypnotherapist anymore, which I'll come on to the reason why in a moment. But it really was purely by accident. I started getting into business networking. I fumbled around in growing my business because I didn't know anything about business. I was in education, not a clue. We especially in primary, we're in a little bubble. We don't have anything to do with the real world at all. So I didn't understand anything about business. So I was really working out as I went along. And that involved going to a lot of networking events. And I think where we first met, actually, Phil, at Four Networking.
Yeah.
And the thing about that was, number one, yeah, it was great. I grew my business through the networking, and I made a lot of great, you know, great friends and associates and things. But the other thing was that there was a lot of talks. So you'll remember people used to do these talks called Foresights that were about 20 minutes long. And a lot of them, the ones that I experienced, were about self-development. And I started to get the idea that there was a way to be in the world in order to be successful in business. Really got that quite seemed to quite quickly get quite ingrained in me. And the idea I had was that we had to be on it all the time, that we had to have kind of a very straight, consistent energy level, motivated all the time, getting up every day, smashing our goals, very kind of hustle mentality. That's what I picked up. And I wasn't like that. I was an adrenally fatigued menopausal woman with now an underactive thyroid as well. So my energy levels were like a roller coaster, and I didn't think that was okay. So I spent a lot of time working on myself, trying to fix myself, trying to make myself better, doing all the kind of morning ritually type things to make myself feel calm enough and make myself feel motivated enough. So there was, you know, affirmations and meditation and gratitude journals and all those kind of miracle morning type things. and endless therapy and self-development books and how to build habits and yada, yada, yada. I went on and on and on. And I was poking around in the past too, trying to find the root cause. And that lasted about 3.5 years. And I was okay, but I felt like I was on this self-development hamster wheel and didn't know how to get off. I felt like I had to keep working on myself to be okay. And it was, I reckon I was spending 10 hours a week. So it was ironic that it was around trying to be more productive, and I'd have been more productive if I'd have spent those 10 hours actually doing some things I needed to get done. So it was all very ironic. And then in January 2020, I was introduced to this understanding that I now teach, which is called the Three Principles. And very, very quickly, I experienced quite a transformation, going from really only feeling very calm when I was in meditation to feeling that state of meditation more of the time, noticing that my productivity got better, my relationships improved, my relationship with everything, not just with other people, but with food, with my business, with life in general, completely transformed. And then March 2020 came along. And of course, we all remember that in all its glory, don't we? That, and my hypnotherapy business, which at the time was in person, completely and utterly disappeared overnight. And in a way, I was grateful because I could see that I didn't want to carry on doing hypnotherapy. It just didn't make sense anymore, because what I'd seen in the 3 months running up to March 2020 had changed my life so much that I wanted to share that, to teach the three principles. And so I retrained, and after a little while, people started to talk about how calmly I spoke and how calm I was, and that that was my persona. And I can't even remember who it was that originally kind of said, you know, you're like the queen of calm. And it just stuck, really. And I carried on with that. And I do feel calmer than I've ever felt in my whole life. And I feel like that most of the time, really, now, no matter what's going on in my world, I can maintain that a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Claire, because I think given the present state of the world at the moment, as we were just saying, I was saying a short while ago, calmness is something people really, lots of people are really sort of seeking for and trying all sorts of things to get there and trying to find. I think the example you gave with regards to when you started out in business, I can identify with that, because that for me was also a very difficult time when I first started out, because you get well-meaning people saying you need to do X, Y, Z. You know, it's almost like you need to be more like me. And in actual fact, no, I don't. I need to find my way, but I need to find my way that's right for me and for what I'm about, what I'm delivering. But it can get very stressful, because you do, we say you don't compare yourself with other people, because you're onto a loser straight away. But people naturally do. They look around and think, oh, perhaps I ought to be doing this. Perhaps I ought to be doing that. Perhaps I ought to be more calm in this area. But and then, like I said, they're trying all sorts of things. So that's, I think, it's a really powerful story of yours in terms of that journey. And like I said right at the beginning, Queen of Calm, what a great title. And I can safely say, remembering those days when I first met you in the networking, you know, I remember those days. I know those four sites that you talk about, and occasionally bumping into you at different places and thinking you are a lot calmer, and it's almost like it's become who you are, this calm person. So the assumption perhaps by many would be, does that mean you've got everything sewn up? Do you experience any challenges? Or is it everything's just plain sailing? I mean, what would you say to that, Claire?
I'll just try and get the words out past the laughter, Phil, I think is the answer to that, because absolutely not. I don't have it all stitched up. And I'm not calm like this all the time. I think the real difference now is that I'm not so bothered when I'm not calm. So you know, you asked my other half. We should have him on here, really, to just give the evidence. But, you know, you asked my other half. Like yesterday, we were doing some decluttering and tidying up, and he was just putting things in the wrong place all the time and doing it all wrong. And so I kept losing my you-know-what with him over and over again. And then coming back to calm again, and then something else would irritate me. I'd be like, you know, and then back to calm again, because I think that's the fundamental issue. Like you spoke before about people seeking calm, but when we see that that's actually our natural state, that's transformative. But also that sometimes we are going to be in this transient form of thought. Thought is transient. It creates our feelings. And sometimes we're in something. We're in our psychology rather than being in the essence of who we are. And that's going to happen to us all day, every day, but it's not a problem. And I think these days, what we've been sold wrongly but innocently is that feelings are a problem. They are a problem to be resolved. That if we have a feeling that's not quite the one we'd like to have, that's not calm, let's just say, we think there's something to do about that. But it is in the doing that we take ourselves further away from calm, because calm's underneath all that. It's the truth of who we are. No one is any more calm than me. They just don't think they are, because they're thinking and they're in their psychology, not in the essence of the truth of this calmness that we really are.
Would you say then that it's actually really important for people to become more self-aware?
I think that's the only thing people need.
Yeah.
That's it. There isn't, like I would say, that's the only thing now that I do, in inverted commas, in order to progress in life.
Yeah.
Is really, in terms of what we might call self-development, it's awareness. Mm. It's just like recently I've been considering, you know, the weight I've put on during the menopause. Like, you know, and I started to notice that I had quite a lot of negative thinking about my body. And I've just brought some awareness to that and started to go, hey, hang on a minute, there's a lot of thinking here that's not very nice about my body, about, you know, why can't my body lose weight? Why can't my body be better? Why isn't it working properly? All that kind of thinking. And I've just started to notice it. And now when I notice it, I just kind of think some loving thoughts towards my body, not as a tool or technique, but just because that makes sense, that I've clearly moved away from having pleasant, caring thoughts about my body. And so I'm just like noticing that. And then I'm, you know, feeling a loving thought towards my body.
Yeah.
So, and that to me is non-judgmental awareness, because I think a lot of self-development says be self-aware, but then it says, and then literally beat yourself with a stick until you do better. Not that, no, more, oh yeah, that's kind of where my mind goes. Oh, it's gone there again. That's okay. Just bring some awareness to it. That's all there is to do. And naturally, we default to this essence of who we are, this truth of who we are, once we notice that we're not there.
Yeah. I think one of the things that has been very clear to me, and perhaps for many people, is we can be harder on ourselves. Okay, with that self-critic, and if we're doing, as I was saying earlier, comparing ourselves with other people, we'll always lose, because we're not the same as them. We're unique individuals. But also at the same time, you know, being kind to yourself. And one of the things I've personally found about the kind of self-awareness is, so if I understand my emotions, rather than trying to work it out, you know, what's going on, sometimes I could be feeling anxious, but actually it's not my anxiety. It could be I realize I'm perhaps in a room with somebody who themselves is feeling anxious. Or the fact that I could be having thoughts about some impending disaster that's not happened. And actually, when I look at the facts, the facts don't say it's going to happen at all. And I suddenly realize because I become aware of it, I can make a better informed choice as to how I'm going to respond. And I suppose that's a lot of what you're talking about, is because of that self-awareness, we're better placed to make better decisions. I'm just thinking as well, Claire, going back to your three principles, really intrigued by that. What are these three principles?
So they are the sort of puzzle pieces of how our human experience is created. So they work together to create our human experience. So the three principles are thought, which we're all very familiar with, perhaps a little bit too familiar. That's part of the problem. Consciousness, which is, you know, the reason we experience life at all is because we're conscious and aware. And mind, which I kind of call universal intelligence, or universe, or the energy of life, the energy of nature. It's that aliveness that runs through everything around us and through us, you know, through all the living, well, through everything, really. That energy runs through everything. Even the things that aren't alive have that energy running through them.
So when you talk about thought, for example, are you talking about being aware of your thoughts as opposed to just allowing things to happen, not really being mindful of them, and then not appreciating the fact that they might actually be contributing to something that's not helpful?
Well, it's almost deeper than that, Phil, in that we're always living in a thought-created reality. There is no outside world making anything happen. There is no outside anybody making us feel anything. It is 100% created from within. So all our feelings, all our perceptions, whether we look at something and I say it's green and you say it's blue, which happens in my house because my fiance is colorblind, it's everything that we experience, everything that we're conscious of, that comes into our awareness is created via thought. And particularly where that's helpful is to understand that when we feel a feeling, anxiety was an example you spoke about before, that feeling is not telling us about the outside world at all, ever. It's telling us about our state of mind. It's telling us about what is going off in our psychology, not telling us about the outside world, and also kind of what level of consciousness we're at. So we can all have an anxious thought and it can just go past because we're not giving it that energy. We're just letting it go past. Whereas sometimes, of course, we have an anxious thought and that becomes a big thing that we really, really feel. I think anxiety in particular is very interesting because I think we've demonized and pathologized anxiety to the point where people find it very difficult even to experience a bit of it without going straight into the meaning making, the story, what that feeling is, what it means about us, what's wrong with us, what we need to do about it. Whereas actually it's got a 90-second duration in reality, as long as we don't go into the thinking about it. Anxiety is as transient as anything else. It's just been made into a monster by the way we talk about it in this day and age.
Yeah, I do in kind sort of understand what you're saying there, because I think that one of the things that as in terms of my faith as a Christian, one of the things that I read about and I look at in the Bible, it talks about whatever is good, whatever is noble, whatever is kind. It goes through a whole list of what I would call positive words. And then it's anything good. Think on these things. And there's lots of places where it talks about the impact that it has on you when you think on those things. Now, I'm not just talking about we need to be people who are just positive thinkers, because we're all dealing with stuff in life, you know, and that's an unreality in one sense. But in another sense, it's about the responsibility we have in terms of how we respond to them. And I remember when I did my neuro-linguistic programming training, that one of the statements was that the map is not the world, and the map being what we conjure in our minds. Mm. And so I get what you're talking about there, about the way that we each individually see the world. And I just think of me and my wife, and we're talking of a subject, and we realize very quickly we both see it from a very different perspective. So what we're looking at, we're actually looking at the same thing, but we're seeing supposedly different things. But it's actually because of the way we see it individually. So I get what you're saying there. I would imagine that that spills over to your consciousness. When you're talking about consciousness, what are you actually referring to? Are you referring to just being aware of things, or is it something more deeper than that?
Yeah, I would say it's something deeper than that. You'll hear people often say at the moment that it feels like there is a rise in consciousness happening, like people are becoming more aware. They are looking at the world now and starting to question whether this directive that it seems we've had throughout our lives to do and chase the big dream and chase the money and whether that is actually the way to go in life. So that's one aspect. But a really nice thing that I like to use is that I like a glass elevator, in that when we're in a low mood and in a low state of mind or a low consciousness, it's like we're in, you know, in the swamps, in the, if you can imagine the glass elevators in nature, you know, we're in the swamps, we're down in the grime and the stuff, and we're in a low level of consciousness, and we don't really know that our thinking is not true. We tend to believe it. We think our feelings are terrible and they're telling us about the outside world. So we're really not very aware. We're not very conscious. Now, what often happens, especially with if we're told to go and try and deal with things at that level of consciousness, we'll get out of the elevator, start poking around in the grubby, horrible swamp, trying to find the answer. In the meantime, the elevator naturally rises, because that's, we have an automatic system, like a psychological immune system, that just naturally rises. But we've got out of the elevator, so we're kind of stuck, really. Now, if we stay in the elevator, we can be aware that we're in the grime and we're in the mud, but we're in a different level of awareness, a different level of consciousness. And as that consciousness rises and we start to become more and more aware, we can start to go, hey, hang on a minute, that thought that says shout at my other half, I don't believe that anymore. So it really, the rise in consciousness to me changes our relationship with our thinking. We start to know really deeply when we're in the thick of it. And we start to go, hey, right now, I don't have to do anything about my mood, but I know not to do things, not to put out into the world, not to speak to people, not to send an email or a message. We kind of know we're in a reactive state, and therefore to do as little as possible, to pause, I guess. And as we rise in consciousness, we become more and more aware, and we start to go, you know, much more of the time now I can have a thought and I don't trust it. I know when it's not trustworthy because it feels off. It doesn't feel good, and the good things come out of a calm feeling as a rule.
Yeah. Do you feel that the world in general, and our nation, perhaps society around us, is lacking a lot of consciousness at the moment?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say, and it's nobody's fault, but it's like we've just been pointed in the wrong direction for such a long time. We've been pointed to, you know, we spoke earlier about the news and what's going on in the world and it looking like the terrible world's creating our experience, but that just isn't true. But we keep being told that it is. The news keeps telling us lockdown made people feel like this, lockdown gave people mental illness, that the news is doing this to people, social media is doing that to people, the outside world is creating our experience. We're being told this over and over again, and it just isn't true. So I think it's a lack of consciousness, but it's confusion, I think, as well. It's a misunderstanding that the majority of people are living in, a misunderstanding about where their feelings are coming from. If you think your feelings are coming from the outside world and something that Joe Bloggs did, then you are going to feel the need to have a go at Joe Bloggs, aren't you? Write him a rude letter or have a go with him in the street or, you know, whatever, send a rude email. You know what I mean? You're going to feel like it's Joe Bloggs who needs to, you're going to want to release that feeling towards Joe Bloggs. When you realize that that's you, then you're going to leave Joe Bloggs alone. and take care of yourself.
Would you say then, Claire, that so let's talk about triggers for a moment, because oftentimes people do react to triggers. And I hear people say, well, this is me, this is who I am, as though actually they can't take responsibility for their responses, their actions, the things that they think about, dwell upon, and so on. And yet, actually, we've all got that ability to do that. But yet, every now and again, something happens. You were referring to your fiancé in terms of putting things away or wasn't doing something right, and you just wanted to react. So in a way, it's kind of a trigger for something. But your consciousness, you know, you're aware by reacting that way, I'm not going to help the situation. And actually, why am I reacting that way? It's because this is how I'm feeling inside. So now I can make a choice to focus on or change the way I'm feeling by perhaps doing something else or thinking something else. Would you say that, you know, I've sort of understood what you're saying there, and my application in the world in terms of those little things, which I call triggers, you know, if we're not aware of them, we'll just react. It all comes out.
Yeah, it's pretty much understanding what a trigger is. So when people talk about being triggered by Joe Bloggs, we'll just keep Joe Bloggs in the story, I think, but they really think that Joe Bloggs is doing something to them that is creating this uncomfortable feeling. Joe Bloggs is doing something in the world that's making me feel something. And that's what people call a trigger. Now, in actual fact, a trigger, when we feel that initial reaction, that's like an amber warning light. That's like your consciousness tapping you on the shoulder and going, just need to let you know, your state of mind's going off right now. You're going. Now, if we think that feeling is coming from Joe Bloggs, reacting to Joe Bloggs makes sense. If we think that feeling is coming from us, looking after ourselves makes sense. That's all it is. So at the point, there's like a point of awareness there, which creates a point of choice, which otherwise we wouldn't have. So it's absolutely true that a lot of people do not see that as a point of choice and would therefore shout at Joe Bloggs or punch him on the nose or whatever. But that's because there's an outside-in misunderstanding that Joe Bloggs is creating the feeling, and a belief in the thought that comes in at the moment that just says, well, the thought kind of is saying, to feel better, you're going to have to punch Joe Bloggs on the nose. It's not quite as detailed as that, but that's all happening very, very fast. Whereas when you start to understand the trigger as a representation of thought in the moment, not anything to do with the outside world, it's a very, very different way of being and a very, very different thing that you do. I tend to see that you do less, you pause more, and you realize that you need to sort yourself out for a minute or two. Now, you still might go to Joe Bloggs and say, excuse me, Joe Bloggs, don't really like what you just did then, and I'd be really grateful if you didn't do it again. From that place, from this place of calm, you're not going to let Joe Bloggs be horrible to you and treat you badly, but you're not going to go and speak to Joe Bloggs when your mind's all over the place.
Yeah, I do get that, and I can remember many, many years ago when I worked in the world of engineering. I worked for a very, very small company. It was a two-man outfit. I was the only employee, and we're one guy who owned the business, who was a really nice guy, and another guy, the partner in the business, was a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde, and he epitomized what you just described there of somebody reacting to a situation, not really being in control of their responses, even though they could be, but they just responded. And the thing was that what came out oftentimes was quite damaging for them, but also damaging for the other people, because it's what you do when you go in a way from that situation. I felt on occasions intimidated, but the positive side of that was there came a point when I decided I'm not going to be intimidated anymore. I need to kind of stand up for myself. Stand up for what I believe is right. And I did that. And it taught me something about myself, what's already in there, what I'm capable of doing in terms of dealing with a situation that is not pleasant, but dealing with it in a calm and strong way. So I wasn't rude or anything like that. I just stood up to the guy. And I must admit, I think to a degree, I gained an element of respect from him. But having said that, there were some real issues there that only he could deal with because they were internal to him, but they just happened to keep spilling out onto everybody else around. So, when you were describing that's the kind of thing that came to mind for me in my own personal experience. Just the last thing then, mind in the three principles. So just would you like just to expand on what do you mean by mind? You know, because people think of mind as being that gray matter up here.
Yeah, fundamentally the opposite of that. So I guess people would call that all sorts of things. You know, from a Christian perspective, you might call that God. You know, you might call it somebody who's kind of on a spiritual, non-religious path might call it the universe. I quite like the energy of life or the energy of nature. It's this power, really, that drives everything and supports everything. So right now, you know, you and I are both breathing. Our food, if we've had some lunch, is being digested. Our heart's beating, and we're not doing any of that. You know, when we look out into nature, we can see it because we can see that, you know, on my lawn, there were dandelions and then there were buttercups, and now there's clover, and none of it's allowed to be cut because the bees need it. So, you know, that's all just happening. Nobody's doing that. Something, some otherworldly force, I guess you might call it, is doing all of that. Now, how I often talk about that when I speak to individuals about this is how we might feel that or connect to it would be that sense of gut instinct or intuition or inner wisdom, that which comes from the space. So when we're calm, you know, for a lot of people, that would be when they're out for a walk or just sitting quietly, the new ideas that come, the times when a decision is made without us feeling like we've made it, this connection to universe, it's like a connection to universal intelligence is a good way to put it. And I think that powers everything, really. That is everything.
Yeah.
All the other things, the consciousness and thought come out of that because that is everything. That is the entire power of the universe.
I suppose the world of mind, as you were describing it, Claire, would be probably for many people, for centuries to come, an area of great, you know, a great topic area, great discussion and debate and all sorts of things. But I do understand what you're saying about that sense of almost like a higher order, a power or... I mean, we only have to look around, don't we, and look at nature around us and the world around us. And if we are able to stop for a moment, we can actually appreciate something that so often we just whiz past and don't even notice it's there. You know, just like the coloured markings on a bird that just happens to be perched on a branch near you that you've not seen before, or just a view that you've driven past so many times, but you've just not paid any attention to it. And it just changes through the seasons without anybody's intervention. It's just changing through the seasons. Mm. But we're just unaware oftentimes because of our busyness of life.
Yeah.
I do understand and appreciate what you're saying. I'm conscious of time, and I just want to come back to this thing really about when you look into the future. You use the term human potential. You know, would you like to just sort of kind of elaborate on that a little bit more as to what you mean by the human potential? Because I know it's a really important area for you. So
yeah, well, it's really interesting because it actually merges beautifully with the last piece that we were talking about this connection to universal intelligence. And it, the human potential is that all of us have access to that universal intelligence, that we have infinite potential, way, way beyond what we've brought up to be, to believe about ourselves, way, way beyond that. But most of us spend most of our time living in that psychology, and the psychology is small. It's restrictive. It's made of our past experiences. It's not the truth of who we are. But as we can become aware that we are spending time in our psychology, and we know that because it feels uncomfortable, we can drop more often into this connection to our own unbelievable potential. And I don't think we'll ever, any of us, we could look in this direction for an entire lifetime and still not see what we are actually capable of. But if we can keep looking in this direction, more and more will be revealed to us over time. And that's what I've seen for myself over the last 3.5 years, is I'm doing things now and being in a way in the world now that I didn't know was me. And that's amazing.
I get that. And I can vouch for it for myself, because I would never in a million years have thought some of the things that I've done, some of the things I've experienced, I would ever have done or experienced. But I think there comes a point in time when you start to look at some of the barriers we place there in our own thinking about our own capabilities and so on are limiting. And when you start to realize actually you're more than what you perhaps believe you are. And we're not, clearly, we're not talking about, you know, thinking beyond ourselves, that sort of pride and arrogance. We're actually just talking about being realistic about the fact that we can, there is so much more about us. It's almost as if we're a deep well and we're discovering more of the contents of that well, and how the contents of that well could take us on, for many of us, some amazing journeys. And also in terms of how we deal with circumstances, that we there's more about us and being able to deal with those circumstances around us than perhaps we give ourselves credit for. And you hear some amazing inspirational stories. And I mean, just your story, you've turned it around from those 20 odd years as being head of a primary school to doing what you're doing now, being in the place that you are personally now, and the impact that you're having on other people's lives. Mm-hmm. You think it's invaluable. And nothing's wasted as well, because even that 20 odd years in education is not wasted. It's like the gems that you pick up on a journey, that you find discovering these little gems around, you pick them up and take them with you. And if you are, as you say, you know, there's that thought, that consciousness and an appreciation of the mind, how you can utilize those gems to take you even beyond where you thought you were capable of being or achieving. Claire, it's been wonderful chatting with you.
Too, Phil. Thank you.
Really appreciate your time. I must admit, and I'll say this to you, I was glad to have met you those years ago in terms of the early days of our networking, so to speak. And it's interesting how our journeys have moved on. Mine's changed, because when I first started, it was all about holistic well-being. Now it's focused around our finances and understanding our relationship with our money and so on. So the money psychology. So to have seen yours develop and where it is now is fantastic. And anybody listening to this, Claire does a wonderful live session virtually every morning, weekdays, is that?
Yeah.
The Queen of Car. And if you really want to know what it is to learn about that calm, then I'd encourage you to listen to Claire on live podcast. Do you want to tell everybody how they would get onto that?
Yeah, so it's on three different platforms actually. When I go live, it's on LinkedIn, YouTube, and on my Facebook page. So wherever you are, you should, if you search Claire Downham, the Queen of Calm, you will find me. And if you can't, drop me a message and I'll point you in the right direction.
Okay, and how would they drop you a message? What's the best way in getting hold of you?
So yeah, they can do that through my website, claire@clairedownham.com. There's a place to message me on there. Or on one of those platforms. LinkedIn's probably not a bad idea, and Facebook as well, if they're connected with me there.
Thank you very much, Claire. It's been wonderful chatting with you, and all the very best going forward.
Thank you so much, Phil. It's been an absolute pleasure.